All right, welcome everyone, and thank you for coming again tonight for the third installment on the Sacred Feminine series. Tonight, we're going to be working with White Tara. So if everybody is ready, I'm just going to adjust the screen. There we go. And off we go. I always appreciate your comments, that they're made live or afterwards. I always read them, and I always take great pleasure in seeing the interest that you guys are showing into these podcasts, which is what keeps me going. So don't hesitate to write your comments if you have any. Now, White Tara. Tonight we're going to be talking about the White Tara of the Tibetan Buddhist tradition. And for some, Tara originated as an Hindu goddess, a great goddess or the mother creator, representing the internal life force that fuels life. In Sanskrit, the name Tara means star. And when I explained the origins, possible origins, of who Tara was and where she came from, we're going to see that the meaning of star becomes very important. She's also called She Who Brings Forth Life, the Great Compassionate Mother, the Embodiment of Wisdom, and the Great Protectress. Now, this is the Hindu goddess, and some researchers believe that Parana Sabari is another name for the Hindu goddess Tara. Now, whether the Tara figure originates as a Buddhist or Hindu goddess is unclear. Now, as we've seen, Kuan Yin went above the border of just one Asian country. It's pretty much seen everywhere in Asia. Now, there's some debate that Tara came from the Hindu Sanskrit tradition and then came over and was introduced to the Tibetan and then later on Mongolia and other parts like Nepal through Buddhism. However, we're going to focus on the Tara in the Tibetan Buddhism tradition. Tara is an iconic Buddhist goddess, and she comes in many different colors. So some of you might say, why did you pick white Tara? Because there's many colors, and I think that what we'll see in the last installment of this series is that just like a woman, we can be a woman, we can be a maiden, we can be a mother, we can be a lover, we can be a wife. In a certain ways, Tara is the embodiment through all these colors to all the different aspects of the feminine. But the white Tara is one of the most popular form. And so that's why I decided to pick this color as opposed to another color. But I will discuss the other colors as well a little bit. She has become one of the most familiar figures of Buddhism around the world. Just like Kuan Yin has different representation, in one she has two arms, in one she has 1,000 arms, Tara also has different representation. And I think it just depends on where you pick Tara in her evolution as a being. I think that they were all of the aspect of the same feminine goddess who evolved and grew and became wise. And I think that the ultimate growth, the ultimate figure, would be the White Tara. So rather than picking her when she was still evolving, I decided to take what seems to be the most peaceful, the most loving, and the most compassionate form of the Tara. And you'll see many familiarities between the Tara, the White Tara, and Kuan Yin. But she's not exactly the same representation as many can assume. They are considered two different deities with different backgrounds, different incarnations, and different messages, different lessons. So we will point out some of those resemblances between the two of them, but they are considered two different beings. Now, who is the White Tara? Tara, in the name in Tibetan is Dolma, and to understand that we're talking about white Terra, we will call her Dolma Carpo, which means white Dolma or white Terra. And some might even call her Dolcar as a, you know, everybody likes to shorten names. Well, even the white Terra is a shorter name. So the full name would be Dolma Carpo, but in short form, it's Dolcar. She is known as the mother of liberation. And we're going to see what she's liberating us from tonight. She, just like all goddesses, she has a counterpart. And she is the represented as the feminine counterpart of the Bodhisattva, Avalokitesvara. And this is where one of the confusion comes from with Kuan Yin, because Kuan Yin is also said to be that. Or, remember from last week, she was him and changes her form and possibly could be something else. So they're closely associated and working with Avalokitesvara. In the many forms of Buddhism, they will recognize the white Terra always as a female. She was never given any male form. She was always the feminine. And depending on the form of Buddhism being practiced, she has different association. So in Mahayana Buddhism, she's a female bodhisattva. Now we remember that the bodhisattva is someone that has reached the level of enlightenment and decides to continue living on earth or even reincarnating in order to free all sentient beings from reincarnation so they can go to nirvana, and they make the vow to keep coming back and keep guiding and teaching until everyone has found peace, inner peace and enlightenment. In Vajrayana Buddhism, she's a female Buddha. She is also known as the first female to obtain Buddhahood. This is going to be very important. The other reason why I picked these specific goddesses is for the role that they played in helping women being recognized as spiritual being and having their rightful place in seeking enlightenment. In Japan, she's known as Tara Bosatsu. And occasionally, in Chinese Buddhism, she is Duolyo Pusa. Now, I'm sorry if I don't pronounce right. I wanted to bring forth the different names. So if people wonder, there are different names, again, depending on the country of origin. She is known as the goddess of self-mastery, meaning by that true seeking enlightenment, someone has to be able to become true the middle way and the teachings of Buddha to reach this place of peace and balance where they can witness event, they can be compassionate, but they no longer will be moved by their emotion. They'll be able to remain compassionate, remain loving, remain peaceful. She's like I said, the first woman to become Buddha. And it said that it took her 10 million years. Now, we could enter a discussion here. Was those 10 million years part of several reincarnation? It's possible. There was a time, even in the Bible, where they recognized that human used to live thousands of years. If you go back to my talk on Atlantis and Lemuria, they would live 35,000 years and look no older than 35. So that it took her 10 million years let us know that it wasn't an easy path, and it took time to reach this enlightened state. But it is said that she devoted her mortal life to gaining enlightenment and spiritual wisdom. She helps us overcome our fear, and that's how she frees us. This is how she delivers us. This is the way that she can help us. Part of having fears is part of being attached to something. The same way that with Kuan Yin, she was helping us free us from our attachment She helps us through liberating our fears. She is recognized as one who helps you cross a situation. In all the documents that I've read and all the research that I've done, just like Kuan Yin, when you call to Tara, White Tara, she will come. She's omnipresent, just like for some of you, the equivalent would be calling for an angel to protect you or something like that. And she will help you get through the situation. So in some of the stories, which are absolutely beautiful, and I don't have time to tell them all here, she helps sailors cross a stormy sea, and she helps people get across certain obstacles. And we will see that in those stories, they talk about lions, they talk about snakes. And we will learn today that those are representation or specific fears of specific things we need to overcome. So I'm taking all of the imagery and actually explaining this imagery for you today so that you may understand, what do those stories mean. So now that you'll know what an elephant represents, you can read the story yet again, and this time keeping that in mind. So rather than just reading a story for the sake of a story, you can understand the meaning attached to the story and how she frees us from those fears and how she helps us get across those situations. Fear is not something that can be taken away. We have to find within ourselves the courage to face those fears, right? So now, how was she born? How did she come to be? According to popular belief, now we're always going to go with the popular belief, and then we're going to go with different explanation or different variation of that story. But the most popular belief is that she came into existence from the tear that Avalokitesvara shed over the suffering of others that he witnessed. When that tear fell to the ground and formed a lake, out of the water rose a lotus, which, upon opening, revealed the goddess. Which is why most of the representation, the iconography, so images or statues, will represent White Tara sitting on a lotus, because this is how she came to be. But knowing that the lotus significance or representation means purity and divineness and enlightenment, the fact that she's sitting on the lotus represents that she's achieved that. She blossomed in wisdom and she blossomed in her enlightenment. Like Avalokitesvara, she is a compassionate being. She is the one that protects. And it's interesting because just like Kuan Yin, she protects you while navigating. Now, remember last week we talked about Kuan Yin and we said that she was the protector of sailors and travel overseas and for travel. And this is where people can confuse Kuan Yin and White Tara and think maybe they're one and the same because they have so many similarities. She does, she's the protector of navigation and earthly travel, as well as spiritual traveling along the path of enlightenment. Now, this is interesting because we are now, through White Tara, seeing that it's a journey to the spiritual enlightenment. It doesn't happen overnight. And on this journey, she can help us grow. She help protects us from distractions and derailment and distractions, right? So she comes in, and every time we feel like we're going to fall off the wagon or go in the wrong direction, we can call for her to bring us peace, to give us direction so that we can get back on track or find our right destination or arrive where we were meant to be the entire time. Now, the other story of her appearance, which I found through the research I've been doing for the past few years on all these different possibilities of who has been guiding us and teaching us, were the gods, right? And the gods always seem to have supernatural powers, and they always seem to be, to varying degree, otherworldly. They can do things that other people cannot, and they can have special talents or forces that nobody else seems to have. A bodhisattva has 10 steps to travel through in order to be able to achieve enlightenment. And the last four steps is their ability to develop supernatural-like powers or gifts and ability that other people have not yet mastered. So through this, it means that they're able to develop their ability to do things that someone who's caught in attachments and pain and fears is unable to do. Just like Jesus was able to accomplish miracles, but some other saints achieved the ability to accomplish miracles, right? To become a saint, you have to accomplish at least 3 miracles. And so the size of these miracles, it doesn't matter, right? That it affected one person or a million person wouldn't matter as long as it's considered a miracle. In the same way, an enlightened being is able to do that. An enlightened being is one that recognizes that we're made of energy, that recognizes that they're a soul. And eventually, one of their ability is to transcend the physical body into a body of light. And that is done through the many different religions around this world. So if they can transcend the body, the physical body, into a body of light, which is what the people in Telos under the Mount Shasta in California are also able to do, then they can live past the decaying of the flesh and the limitation that we do have in the material world, which could explain why she lived 10 million years. Now, I haven't personally met Waitara or interviewed her, so I have to go based on what I know and what I've read. So I can't answer all of your questions. You know, some people are like, there's still things that I don't understand, or that, you know, how do you know this? And I believe that if something has survived this long, then there had to be in the beginning some truth to it. Otherwise, it would have just been another story. Like, do we remember what was on the news 6 months ago or 10 years ago? Unless it was a specific event that impacted a lot of lives, then, you know, we wouldn't tend to repeat the story. So for these goddesses to have survived through time and space for so long, part of their story becomes part of a legend, part of myths. But yet, I truly believe that these people have existed, and at some point in time, we were relating their story. We weren't relating a myth. But some of their actions are so fantastical and so amazing that we come to believe that it's just a story. And we have to believe in a little bit of magic in order to get our lives to be wonderful again. Now, in the reason why I said all this and explain all this is because in one of the origin story of the Waitara, it says that she was a young princess who lived in a different world system millions of years in the past. Now, different world system could mean two different things. It could mean that she came from the star, hence her name. Her name meaning star, or she could have been part of a different world system, meaning perhaps Atlantis or Lemuria, and live at the different maps, different place that is no longer being recognized because it no longer exists. So I'm, because of the name meaning star, I'm inclined to think that perhaps she came from another planet or another star system. Her name at that time was Yanankandra or Yeshidawa, which means moon of primordial awareness, right? So this was the name of this young princess. So she comes to us as a star, but her primary name used to be the moon of primordial awareness, meaning that the moon is considered the white circle, and a lot of the Waitara depiction, you will see her with a white disc behind her, which would mean her, and that's what's so beautiful about Tibetan tradition, is that every single thing in a drawing has a particular meaning as to where they came from and what was their journey to enlightenment to guide us. And so this is why I always take the time to go through the symbolism, so that you understand that symbolism has meaning. You can just see a picture and say, oh yeah, that's White Tara, there's the white disc, she's got white skin and she's got seven eyes. But what is the meaning? Why is she depicted that way? Was that the way she truly looked? Or was it just the meaning behind it that they're trying to convey through the pictures? Anyway, so this princess, for a number of eons, was making offerings to the Buddha of this world system. Now, remember who Buddha is. Buddha is the enlightenment, right? It's the perfect embodiment of enlightenment, of knowledge, and of wisdom. And the name of the Buddha that she was making this offering to was Tonyo Drupa. Now, she received special instructions from him. And those instructions, did they come as a vision? Did they come as a guidance? Did they come in scriptures? I don't know. But she received special instructions from him considering the bodhicitta, the infinite compassionate mental state of a bodhisattva. So the bodhisattva is one who dedicates her or his life to all sentient beings so that they can no longer need to go through reincarnation and go to nirvana. And one of those is the mental compassionate state, and she received information about that. After doing this, interestingly enough, some monks apparently approached her and suggested that in her, because of her level of attainment, she should next pray to be reborn as a male to progress further. And this is where the White Tower becomes very much human, as far as I'm concerned. She said to them, only weak-minded worldlings would see gender as a barrier to attaining enlightenment. Now, this is very interesting because Kuan Yin says the same thing in a different way, in a different fashion. But she was the key for women to be able to achieve the path to enlightenment. The path was opened for them by these beings. And White Tara was the same mind, saying that sadly, there was too few people working, and they were sentient born, working in a female form to obtain enlightenment. So therefore, she resolved to always be reborn as a female until samsara is no more. So this is interesting because, you know, before I said, I don't know, it says it took her 10 million years to attain enlightenment. But here in this version, she acknowledges consciously that she's being reborn. And in this cycle of rebirth, she chose to be a female each and every time to obtain Buddhahood and encourage the number of females working towards enlightenment and reaching nirvana. She then stays in a palace in a state of meditation for some 10 million years. And the power of this practice that she did, that you have to understand that being a bodhisattva is a gift of self, right? It's true acknowledging, it's a highest level of consciousness, true realizing that, yes, you can go to heaven and nirvana and never have to be reborn again. But if you do that, how are other people going to know what to do to get there? It's one way, sure. I mean, I've done most of my spiritual journey and transformation on my own, reading books and working and trying to find mentors and trying to be guided and always seem to be forging away and in a high field, and it hasn't been easy. And this is one of the reasons why I do these podcasts and these YouTube videos. It's to, now that I know the information and I've acquired information and knowledge for decades now, I find it a waste of my time if I find peace, but nobody else does, because they don't know all the books that I've read. They don't have the courage or the money to travel and to go find those answers and be lucky enough to come across people who will guide them in their journey. So there's a part where they recognize that it's not because we've reached a certain level that we are free of responsibility to the others surrounding us or in a community. We need to be able to help each other finding this peace. If everybody finds peace, then we can all be free. So she stays there, and the power of her practice, her dedication, released tens of millions of beings from suffering. So her work, her teaching, her example has helped millions of beings. Now, we're saying beings or sentient being because they're not necessarily all humans. It could be dogs, it could be cats, it could be anything. It could be dolphins, right? Sentient beings is much more than just a human. So as a result, Tonyo Drupa, which is the Buddha of that world, tells her she will henceforth manifest Supreme Bodhi as the goddess Tara and the many world system to come. So the many world system, if we now know that how old she is, she's been reincarnated and she's been present and she's been worshipped. Her name was always known as White Tara. So again, it might explain why she is known in a world system of India for the Hindu goddess, and she's known in a world system of Tibetan Buddhism, right? We understand the world system. It's, mind you, this has been translated from Tibetan to English, but the explanation behind it to support that is that we have to overcome our limitation and understanding in being limited by the third dimensional world and trying to expand our vision past just the present and go further and further into the past. Just watched a show with William Shatner, and they're talking about ancient aliens, and he's interviewing the group of scientists on that show, and he's telling them, but you haven't convinced me yet, right? We can either have a limited view and just say that that's the only explanation, or we can expand our consciousness into different level of awareness and realize that before the Ice Age, we had technology. But just imagine that in that world, we've reached the level of technology we've reached today. And maybe what caused the Ice Age was massive explosions and destruction. And then we know that volcanoes exploding can do that. But it could also be that which is the explanation behind the destruction of Atlantis and Myra. They had technology, but then, you know, it got destroyed. So imagine that we just run out of electricity forever. And so we no longer have phones, we no longer have the internet. So if you don't have an encyclopedia or books at home, now you're going to go, well, normally I would just search it on my phone, but I can't do that anymore. So all of a sudden, there's a whole bunch of people that become obsolete, and people don't know how to hunt. They don't know how to make a garden. They don't know how to grow food. Our house go in disrepair, and then we have to find other structures that we can build because we can no longer make bricks, and we can, you know what I mean? It wouldn't take long for the way that we live to change and revert to what would seem to be a savage way or primitive way of living. But, you know, we wouldn't be able to transport things across. Without electricity, so many more things would stop working, right? So when we talk about world systems, I believe that she might have come from way further back than we know, and her knowledge and her wisdom transpires through every time a new inspiration comes. She returns as White Tara. So Tara manifested also in different forms. She is known to be the incarnation in every pious woman in Tibet, but specifically the two wives of the first Buddhist king of Tibet. Now his name, bear with me, is Srong Bratsan Gampo, And he first married the princess, the Nepalese princess Brikuti. They had to flee, and they came to Tibet. And there, the Nepalese princess managed to what seems to be the form of the Green Terra manifestation, and she built over 43 temples. She was quite devout and a Buddhist devout, and she was the bringer of sacred images and statues. She filled temples and in Lhasa, I guess would be the main city in Tibet. They have a temple dedicated to everything that the sacred images that she did and created and ordered, and the statues. This was around 600. Before Christ, so we're talking about over 2,500 years ago. Now, there's a little bit of a conflicting story on how the other princess came to marry the king, depending on if you take the Buddhist side from Tibet or the Chinese version, right? So the Chinese version are trying to put Tibet down, so they're not very kind, but either or... The story is that eventually the princess married either as a peace offering so that the Tibetan would stop fighting with China, or as a contract marriage. But the princess Wencheng, which means princess civilizer, did marry the king, the Buddhist king, and went to Tibet. And there she brought peace between China and Tibet. The war that they fought stopped. And her influence on Tibet, again, varies depending if you're from China or if you're from Tibet, historians. But she did bring some agricultural means. She brought maps. She brought treaty agreements. And so she helped the two countries, the two civilizations, work together in a peaceful way. So Brikuti, which is the Nepalese princess, and Wencheng, which is the Chinese princess, are said to have worked together to establish temples and Buddhism in Tibet. So they worked together. The princess Wencheng is associated to the incarnation of the White Terra, where the Nepalese princess was the Green Terra. Now, what does the White Terra symbolism mean? Well, first of all, the color white represents a symbol of purity. Her whiteness also indicates the undifferentiated truth of the Dharma. Now, she's often represented in her right hand, holding something in her left hand, so they both have meaning, and that's why they're held differently. She's usually standing at the right hand of her consort, which is Avalokiteshvara, or seated cross-legged, holding the full-bloom lotus or being on the lotus itself. She's generally shown with a third eye, where the third eye is, and is associated to longevity, maturity, and compassion. How does she counteract dying and giving you longevity? She helps you overcome illness. So you know when I said earlier that she helps you get across a difficult situation? Well, illness being one of those situations. So you don't necessarily have to be traveling anywhere. You can be in your bed, but she'll get you from sick to healthy, and she'll get you across this threshold back to the health, and thereby affording you long life. She is always represented, the White Terra, in a calm, meditative aspect. So she'll be meditating, she'll be sitting. And that is to give the worshippers serenity, peace. Yes. Now, the White Terra, as sometime, instead of just the three eyes, she will have seven eyes. Now, we see again a comparison with Kuan Yin, where Kuan Yin had 1,000 eyes. For the same reason, the White Tara has seven eyes. So she has the two, the third eye, one in each hand and one in each foot. And those symbolize her compassion, vigilance, to see all the suffering in the world through the enlightened vision and omniscient version. That is the most popular form in Mongolia. Now, is it possible that through the centuries, the Taoism eye, Kuan Yin, gave the inspired Tara to have seven eyes? I don't know how that came to be. But the idea, the symbolism behind it, is that she's omniscient. Means she can be in a lot of different places, look in a lot of different directions, and see beyond the third dimensional world, which is where she can help you on your spiritual journey. Yes? Now, her left hand is the protective mudra. She usually will hold the stem of a lotus flower. Sometimes this particular lotus flower will have three blossoms. One blossom is represented as a seed, the second one ready to bloom, and the third one in full bloom. These represent the Buddhas of the past, the present, and the future. The left hand is what bestows blessing, refuge, and protection. In her right hand, the wish-granting hand, mudra, is granting wish from spiritual and material nature. So often a small image of Amitabha, a Buddha known for longevity, is portrayed sitting on White Tara's headdress, just like Kuan Yin. Right, so Kuan Yin, it was in her crown, Amitabha is there. For the White Tara, it's either in her headdress or slightly above her head. So we can see the many similarities in the depiction of these two, and also that they're both about compassion. Now, depending on, again, if you're from China, if you're from Tibet, if you're from Nepal or Mongolia, she, again, could be born of someone else's tear, and this this compassion is what identifies her with the consort Avalokitesvara, right? Because he is deeply moved, and he experiences this compassion. And in the same way, being born of this tear, she is born of compassion. So that's why she's all-compassing compassion. Through all the manifestation of Tara, and we're talking about the white, the blue, the yellow, the gold, the White Tara is the most closely linked to the essential nature of compassion. Her pure compassion is compared to the suffering that she feels to be greater than a mother has for her child, right? So if you have children, you know that when your child's hurting, there's a part of you that hurts. You wish you could take that hurt away. I remember when my son was young, he needed to have an operation and they needed to take a blood test. And of course, he was a little baby and it was really hard to get a vein and a blood test out of him. And I literally said, take mine instead. Now, in the moment, you know, I really meant it. I didn't want to see him suffer. And I was okay with me getting a blood test. If I could have had the operation he needed, I would have gone and had the operation so he would stop suffering. Mothers are like that. It is said that the White Tara, her compassion is greater than a mother's love for her child. So, this is what makes her a bodhisattva, right? This is what makes her wanting to help the whole world, stop the suffering of the whole world. Now, in Buddhism, in Tibetan Buddhism, she is known as the Mother of Liberation, right? I said that earlier. Because she protects against eight, what's called obscuration, translated from Tibetan, meaning eight thing that obscure the way to enlightenment, right? So it's always a question of light and shadows. So the idea is to be in full light. And so what comes and casts a shadow on this light are eight specific things. These are related through stories where she saves people from lionesses and elephants and snakes. But what's important is we need to know what the lions, the snakes, and the elephant mean. Yes? So the lion represents pride. And these come from books that I got from Tibetan temple, Buddhist temple. There's a lot of teachings in there. So these are not my suggestions that what the lion could mean. These are part of the teachings. But it makes sense, right? That a lion's prideful. A lion is recognized to be part of a pride. So whenever she defeats the lion, we're defeating pride. The wild elephant, they represent delusion and ignorance. And so when she defeats the white elephants, or she protects people from white elephants, she protects them from delusion and ignorance. Fires. This is hatred and anger. Now think about this, you know, it's funny because there's the mortal sins, yes? And if we compare the mortal sins to these obscuration, they're starting to look a lot of the same. They're very, very similar because hatred and anger is considered wrath, right? There's desires we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about greed and stuff. These are the mortal sins that are being taught in one religion. And yet in Buddhism, you're warned to overcome these same exact things. So if you didn't catch it before, maybe pay really good attention and examine truthfully yourself, right? This isn't just about listening and saying, oh, that was interesting. She had the cool information to give us today. No, these are recorded and they're left on Facebook, YouTube, and on podcasts for a reason. So you can return to them and ask yourself honestly, right? Not in judgment, I'm not doing this to cause you pain or make you feel bad about yourself. On the contrary, I need you to go inside through introspection and ask yourself, have I ever committed the sin of pride? Am I being ignorant in this situation, right? So the fires are representing hatred and anger. The snakes represents jealousy. It's very interesting because, as you know, I will try to touch on when eventually the Incas, they see the snake. They don't see the snake as a negative thing. But here, the snake is associated with jealousy, which is interesting because in the Bible, Adam and Eve, the snake is jealous. The snake doesn't have arms and legs, and so out of jealousy of the things that he cannot do, he tried to take away from others what they can have by misguiding them. Yeah. So the snake here in the Buddhist tradition represents jealousy, very similar to the snake that Christians might know. Bandits and thieves represent wrong views, or including fanatical views. So wrong views mean to follow ideas and morals that are wrong. Now, I often say there's no right, there's no wrong. But a view of the world that only makes certain people happy in this tradition would be what's considered wrong. Buddhism believes we're all equals. Buddhism believes that we cannot be happy unless everyone is happy. And so if your actions or your morals or your view of the world is different than that, then it takes you away from the path that you're supposed to be on. A wrong view would be to say it's okay to own slaves. A wrong view would be to say your skin is darker, therefore you're impure. Yes? So there's ideas that go along ignorance as well. I mean, they kind of work together, right? They're not wholly dependent from each other. So the bandit and thieves in the stories, including Waitara, when she protects people against those, is protecting them against wrong views. Yes? Now, bondage means the equivalent of avarice, greediness, miserlessness. So, you know, a miser is someone that lives poorly but is very rich and won't share because he thinks he can take it to the grave and then it's going to be helpful. So that's what bondage represents. Floods. Floods represents desire and attachment. So here again, Mary Magdalene spoke of desires and attachment. Kuan Yin spoke of desires and attachment. And White Tara tries to warn us and free us from desire and attachment. And then lastly, one of the last stories on the White Tara is she frees people from evil spirits and demons. They represent deluded doubts. Yes, you need faith. The more faith you have, the more your faith will grow. But if you have no faith at all, then nothing's going to happen. There has to be a part of you that starts believing in something. And remember before I said we need to have more magic. Not in the sense of having things appear and disappear, but believing in the unseen, which is truly what magic is. We all know, I'm assuming we're all adults watching this video. We all know that the magician has a trick. There is a trick. And he's not going to tell us because then they'll take all the magic away. But we love seeing and being amazed and going, wow, how did he do that, right? In a book that I'm reading called The Life of the Masters, it's a book that was written over 130 years ago. And at first was thought to be a fictional story, a fantasy story, because in there, the archaeological men who are in the Himalayas, so through Nepal, Tibet, and China and all that, they're going to different areas in the Himalayas. They're meeting people who can appear in their body of light and be part of a discussion and disappear again. By changing their vibration of their body, they can also make food appear like Jesus did. Jesus multiplied the bread and the fishes. And this experience was lived 130 years ago by the great masters in the Himalayas. So to be a witness to that, then you can't undeny these things. You can call them whatever you want. You can call them crazy. You can call them imaginative. You can then follow fantasy stories. But once you start experiencing these events, then you can no longer deny the possibility of these things existing. And if they exist, your path and your journey for you to get there will be to free yourself from these 8 obscurations or shadows. So again, pride, delusion or ignorance, hatred and anger, jealousy, wrong views, fanatical views, greed, desires, attachment, and deluded doubts. You need to free yourself from these things in your life. I was thinking, and I've been reflecting a lot today preparing for this, and you know that if you're expecting someone to come into your life and make you happy, you will never be happy. As wonderful as it is to share your life with someone, it's not their job to make you happy. They can love you, they can support you, they can encourage you, they can do many things, but they cannot make you happy. You have to ask yourself, what do I need to be happy? Not what you want, what do you need? When you ask yourself that question, you'll come to a place in your life and you realize the clothes that I'm buying are not making me happy. They're giving me fleeting attention, but then it doesn't make me happy because once I've worn it 2 or 3 times, I don't get the attention anymore and I don't like this dress anymore. It's solely an object. However, no matter what you're wearing, if you are happy, it won't matter the clothes that you wear. You have to determine what makes you, if it's easier, what makes you unhappy, right? For some people, it's always easier to focus on the negative than trying to imagine the positives. Some people are so depressed and negative and defeated that they can no longer even imagine this magical place of happiness. And so then they push it onto others to make them happy. Happiness comes from within. You need to remove the things that make you unhappy. And then you will have to go on this self search this introspection that I keep talking about and finding your true power. What are your gifts? What are your abilities? What were you gifted with? Because everyone is born with special abilities. For some, it's to have the magical voice and an angel. For others, it's to play music. But for some, it's to design these amazing homes that we live in, or to create art. But for some, it's their ability to listen, to be finally heard. For some people, is what makes them happy. Find where you lost yourself. Where you lost yourself is when you got hurt. Heal that in within yourself. And hopefully with White Tara, or one of the sacred feminine that I'm presenting to you in these podcasts, you will be able to get there, right? So the Green Tara, she tears away at false belief. So it's interesting because White Tara covers 8 different aspects of what keeps us away from enlightenment. But the Green Tara is helping us with the false beliefs. So when we go into the different colors, this is my theory, by the way, which is why I think that at a certain point in time, she was the Green Tara and she was tearing away of the false belief. And then eventually, through this cleansing and this purity and becoming an enlightened being, she became the White Tara. So that's why I specifically picked the white, because I think that she's more encompassing. And she teaches us through simple methods of calm and compassion and love, which is the ultimate expression of what the soul is. The Tibetan Buddhism, under its influence, Tara took a form up to 108 different forms. Tibetan temple banners frequently will show 21 different Taras. The colors could be white, red, yellow, and they're usually grouped around the Green Tara, the White Tara. Tibetan usually think that Tara as having 21 manifestation, as she does in the common Tibetan Buddhism prayer in praise of the 21 Tara. Now, and this can be, again, taken literally, there were 21 Taras, or more spiritually, that she had 21 different aspects of herself. Now, going back to the fact that I was a maiden at one point, I'm still a woman, but I was a mother, I was a wife, I'm still me, right? And right now, I'm a teacher, I'm a giver of information, but I'm still me. So there's different aspects of me. So we can take it that there was 21 incarnations of Tara, or that she had different aspects. Taking different colors and different shapes, different sets of arms, number of eyes varying. But the White Tara is known for the compassion, long life, healing, and serenity, and also wish fulfillment. Now, the red color Tara, there's more than one, but one of the aspect of the red color Tara is to magnetize all good things. So if you magnetize things, then you become a magnet. If you become a magnet, you will attract all good things by becoming good. Yes, it works. It's a law of attraction. The black Tara is associated with power. There's various forms of yellow or golden colored Tara. And one of them is granting wishes, so wealth and prosperity. So we can think yellow, gold Tara, gold. Yes, the blue Tara is the transmutation of anger. This is important. Transmutation of anger. So not being angry, but taking this anger and transforming it. I often say that we can't avoid always being angry. We should be angry sometimes at seeing things that are unfair, unjust, and we should do something about it. But it shouldn't be a destructive anger. It shouldn't be something that demolishes or destroys. It should be using the power, that surge of power inside of us, and bringing change, which is what the transmutation means, right? Transforming changing it for the better. And so it goes on to the different names of Terra, but one that I really liked was the Rainbow Light Terra. She is surrounded by rainbow light, which is different rays of the colors of the rainbow. And she is the goddess who brings forth awareness. I like that. I think it goes along with the different recognizing that you have multifaceted being and recognizing this awareness that you are all of those things. I often hear mom saying, wow, I can't remember last time someone called me Sonia or Julia or whatever, because everybody calls me, you know, Ben's mom or George's mom. And it's nice to be reminded that we are more than just that. But we need to be aware of that. We need to live that. We need to honor all of those parts of ourselves. And I think that's part of where women tend to lose themselves, because we have so many roles, so many responsibilities, and we carry so much on our shoulders that we tend to put ourselves last. And it's not selfishness to put ourselves first. I think that if I'm tired, if I'm exhausted, if I don't have any more energy, how can I be good at all these things? So I usually will take the time to take care of me, recharge my batteries, get more sleep, get more rest, do my own personal meditation, so that I can be there in all these other roles, fully awake and 100% energized, being able to accomplish these things. Yes? Very good. Ziva is asking if the author is Spalding. I believe so. It's the I have the book in French, but I think so. Now, Terra is a meditation deity, right? The white Terra is always seen sitting meditating on this white lotus. And she does so to inspire us to develop certain inner qualities, to understand the outer and the inner secret teaching. Now, I don't like the word secret. You all know that. I think that we've lived enough with mystery schools, which we'll do the podcast on. That'll be my next segment, the mystery school and what are the mysteries that they're teaching. I think that it's not so much as a secret as it's so deep inside of us that it becomes a secret to ourselves. And those secret is karuna, which is compassion, metta, which is loving kindness, and shunyata, which is emptiness. So White Terra is the goddess of compassion. She's the representation of loving kindness, because she doesn't love in lust. She loves as a mother. And emptiness is all the releasement of all these desires and attachment, which leaves it empty, right? So we're no longer cluttered with all these things and we are free. So the emptiness is a sense of freedom. For those of you interested, the practiced text, so to practice the meditation, you can be fine. The most two important texts on White Terra is Praise to the 21 Terras, and the text on Terra in Tibetan Buddhism. To meditate with Terra is to grant yourself health, long life, fearlessness, patience, and peace. So remember that each of these goddesses, through different means, are there to assist us and trying to teach us how to do this. And Terra, I mean, it could be, as far as I'm concerned, that's the easiest way, because you must do the meditation, and I'm really good at meditating, so it's great for me, it works. For some of you, meditation is more of a challenge. So you might think, oh, this is going to be hard. In 2011, the White Terra Long Life Initiation by Tritul Gyampa Kalden Rinpoche in the U.S. Tibetan House gave an explanation as to the benefits of and the reason for seeking a White Terra initiation. Now, I've received the White Terra initiation. If you're interested in something like that, you need to understand the process that's going to take place, so that you're not surprised and you don't get there and start fidgeting and appearing bored. It's a weekend, if the teachings are included, and it requires you to go through mantras. The mantras are, of course, in Sanskrit or Tibetan form, so they're not in English, which for some is represented difficulty because that you don't understand what you're saying. It's just a bunch of sound and they kind of step over each other and it becomes confusing. But the resonance of the sound is healing. And as far as I'm concerned, brings me into a deeper state of meditation. So I recommend that you do what we're going to practice tonight. And if it's something that calls to you, that resonates within you, start looking for White Tower initiation. There's different places that are offered in different Tibetan house or monasteries across the US and Canada. So it's not impossible to get that training. It's very doable. The other thing is that a lot of the times the Rinpoche, which is a teacher, won't necessarily speak English, but they will have, if it's in the Canada and the US, they will have translators to translate the teaching. So you will be able to understand. They might also provide you with booklets to take with you. And so you can keep the teachings with you with the proper pronunciation and explanation on what you're supposed to do and what you're supposed to visualize while you're meditating and all that. White Tara initiation or White Tara meditation, if it's the best that you can do, something is better than nothing, I assure you, will help you remove the obstacles in your life that are either caused by your exhaustion of good karma and merit, or reciting of the mantras will readjust your energies and augment, because as you're doing these meditations, you're also dedicating this vibration to the world and other sentient being, enhances your merit and your good karma. So the more you're meditating, you're not just helping yourself, you're helping all the other sentient beings that are around you. The other obstacle that could be in your life that could be cleared away by meditating or being initiated by the White Tara is negative karma, right? So it could be a lack of energy or it could be an accumulation of the negative energy. Sometimes we do things and we don't realize that the effect of our action is hurting someone. We're not necessarily beating someone with a stick, but we're not being kind either, because with our words, we're tearing apart, right? So it's helps purify this negative karma that you're accumulating in this lifetime. And we've all been unkind, we've all been rude, we've all done things that, you know, affects our karma. So for that sake, without having to be a murderer, meditation with White Tara would be a great way to rebalance this energy. White Tara is extremely powerful. She's very close to the sentient beings. So not just human, right? She's very close to us and she's very quick to fulfill her wishes and grant us happiness and long life. Now, again, remember the law of attraction. You can't, this is not voodoo or black magic. If your wish is to harm someone, it's not going to happen. This is based on compassion and loving kindness. So as long as these are the intents in your heart, as long as what you're holding is those relating to compassion and love, then she will be there to grant you and help you develop in your wisdom. By taking refuge in Tara and practicing the meditation and the visualization and having faith, you have the power to remove the obstacles. Or the obstacles will be removed for you. Because remember, what's inside of you is reflected in the world around you. If you have chaos around you, then it's because there's chaos inside. before I prepare for these, I will do the actual meditation of the different goddesses to prepare mentally and spiritually for it. But I also prepare my environment. So I have the nice background and I clean my desk and I square away anything that could be distracting or bring my intention or my attention elsewhere. So I can really, really focus on what I'm trying to explain and really be able to transcend this message to you. So in the initiation, the White Terrace Long Life Initiation is very popular amongst the Tibetan. I received mine some years ago in Mount Shasta at a temple there. It was absolutely lovely. And I also worked with White Terra through sound meditation with Tom Kenyon. Tom Kenyon is a musician in the States, and he principally used to host different, very intense weekend meditation through sound. And we will talk about him next week some more because of Hathors. He's the main channel for Hathors on the planets. Hathors being a goddess of Egypt. So, you know, you're going to love that. So the main mantra for Buddhists and Hindus are very alike. Tare tutare tura soa. Okay. Tare tutare tura soa. This is the basic Green Terra mantra. Now, for the White Terra mantra, we do add some words to it, right? So we add Mama Ayur Pune Giana Pontin Kuru Soa. So now you're looking at me going, oh my gosh. And I looked on YouTube, and on YouTube there are some videos with a full mala of the entire mantra. So, but it's more of a singing kind of mantra, so they go all over the place. When I received my initiation, it was very monotonous kind of sound, and it has this hypnotic effect of putting you into this mental state of relaxation and peace. So because you're supposed to recite this and do a visualization at the same time, I would try to, for you, to find wherever you are on YouTube or a DVD or a sound file, the actual mantra being sung through an entire mala so that you can repeat with them the sounds without having to read the sounds while you do your visualization. So the entire longer version of the mantra becomes Om Tare Tutare Tura Mama Hayur Pune Gyana Puntin Kuru Soa. Alright? The translation means the liberator of suffering, Waitara, shine light upon me to create an abundance of merit and wisdom for long life and happiness. That's what it means. And I would like to thank devaprimalmiten.com for this translation, because I do not speak Tibetan. Not yet, anyway. So the White Terra mantra is got a significance. Each of the words is Mama means mine or for me. Ayur means long life. Punya is the merit that comes from living life ethically. Jhana is wisdom. Pushtim is increase, or increase the wisdom. And Kuru means do so or do it now. And Soha means blessing upon. May blessing be upon you or hail you or something like that. But the entire translation being, if you put it into a phrase of all these words, is the liberator of suffering, shine light upon me to create an abundance of merit and wisdom for long life and happiness. Now the visualization that goes along this mantra is you then close your eyes and you visualize the White Terra either above your head or right at the head, right at your forehead, right where your third eye is, and you visualize long life nectar from her heart. So she's pouring white light energy from the heart into your crown. So if she's here, it's going this way. If she's above you, it goes straight down. And it completely fills your body. Now, for those of you who do Reiki, will say, oh, geez, that looks a lot like a Reiki meditation. It's the white light pouring inside of us, filling us. Yes, you're made of energy. So anything, now we're seeing that Reiki is now reaching through the White Tara teachings. You have to fill yourself with light. And she's helping you, giving you this light from her heart, feeding you this nectar of life, and completely filling you up to the point where you can even overflow. And then it gets shared with others around you as you're spreading this white light around you. You hold the intent that all negative karma, harm, sickness is purified from your body. So as the white light fills you up, it takes all the space that was occupied by worry or fears or anything else. You do this during an entire mala. Now, what's a mala? Mala is 108 beads. So I have one here, and I have a pretty one that was given to me by a friend in Sweden. It's absolutely gorgeous. And you can have the version with the bigger beads. Now, the smaller beads are pretty, but sometimes it's hard to keep one bead to do your actual mantra. So having a little bit bigger beads might be helpful to know, okay, I've done this one, I'm doing this one. And there's always a bigger bead. So you'll start on one side and you'll travel all the way to the other side. And you do 108 repetition of the mantra. That is considered one mala. Now, you can repeat several malas. Some people will do two or three times. And then you might think, oh my gosh, how long that's going to take. The mantras take about 10 to 15 minutes to do a whole mala. That's it. It's a 10 to 15 minute meditation. Now, all of you just went, oh, now that's interesting. It's not an hour long. It's 10, 15 minutes. So I would encourage you to either record on your phone if you can't find the proper music or whatever you want on YouTube. But if you can, I particularly like Buddhist singing. I have the Tom Kenyon's recording. So if I want to do the White Tara meditation, he has this deep, amazing voice and I just love it. So he does the mala. So I can put that on and sing along with him while I'm visualizing. I'm still not confident enough for the very long mantras to know that I won't make any mistake, and then that will distract my intent of clearing my bad karma or bad energies or sickness. That is, it draws me away. So always go with the simplest thing that you can do in order for you to achieve the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal here is to hear the sounds, hear the mantra 108 times, and then visualize this white light coming from White Tara sitting on this lotus, right? And if you go on the web, I don't own any of these images, right? So if I show them to you, then I could be in violation of copyrights. And there's people listening on podcasts which they can't see any images. So you can easily find White Tara images on the web, and you can help you understand the depiction of what you're supposed to visualize, and then see from your heart this white light filling you up. That's what's important, right? So if you're distracted and you can't, you know, and you get all confused with singing a mantra properly and making mistakes, then either record it ahead of time, 108 times, and you can add some personal music to it, and then replay the recording and then do the actual meditation with the visualization, or find the sound already recorded somewhere else and go along with that sound and focus on this visualization. During the initiation, there are several other visualizations that are applicable, but then they become more and more complicated and require some guidance and teaching along with that. So start with the initial visualization of this purification of long life with White Tara. And if this calls to you, if this resonates with you, then go and look for the actual initiation of White Tara. You can pray to White Tara as well. So the way that the Buddhist scripture works is they're reading from the scriptures. And those reading from the scripture is a way to do the prayers, right? So the praises to the 21 Tara prayer is an example, or the White Tara Sadhana. As you're reading those, it becomes a prayer. So it's a little bit different than our usual prayers that we might be used to, right? However, from the story and the myths that White Tara has been brought to us, people in dire need, people in their time of need, simply call to White Tara for help, and she did come. So it doesn't have to be super complicated. Your prayer can be simply addressing her and asking her for help. As long as your intent is pure and based on compassion and love, it could be self-love, but it can, you know, so, or it could be for love for something else. But if your intent is pure, White Tara will come. And the other way is, again, to do the actual White Tara meditation. Now we're almost at the end. My gosh, I'm always thinking, you know, am I going to be able to fill an hour and a half of content? And then I look at the time and I go, ooh. Good thing we're almost at the end here, because it's the time is flying right by. The lesson that White Tara teaches us, either through her own enlightenment path or through the different stories and myths that have come to us. Now remember, these myths, now the lion represents pride and the snake represents, you know, the fire represents anger, their representation. But what she wants to remind us is that awakening, the awakening, right? So in order to be awakened, you need to do the introspection. And a lot of you are so afraid to look inside of yourselves. You all think that you're so broken and so beaten and so ugly for some reason, and you're not. When you finally look inside, you will find that you are beautiful souls, and that this is just part of a learning experience for your soul. So when you're doing this, remember this selfishness I was talking about. You're not being selfish. You're not retreating from your personal problem, but rather, as you're healing yourselves, then you can reach outward with more energy, with more wisdom, with more balance, and start embracing the entire world with the love and the compassion in your heart. But, I mean, I know some people that are very kind, very helpful, but they don't love themselves. And then they wonder why things are not turning out right. And it's not turning out right because you're not taking the time to heal yourself, and you're not taking the time to love yourself. For some people, living alone is a terrible, terrible woe. And yet, I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying this time that I have where I can go at my own rhythm, at my own pace, and I don't have to make anybody else happy. I don't have to take care of anybody else. These times that I have with myself are precious, because I've been a mom of three and I held a full-time job, and I know how busy things can get, and I remember forgetting about me. And so now I always make time for me. It doesn't mean that I'm not spending time with other people, that I'm not generous with my time, or that I'm not a social being. On the contrary, those who actually know me personal know that I love being social and having people over and playing games. But amidst all that, it's important that I take care of me so that I can continue being like that. She tells us to free ourselves from self-serving thoughts, meaning that we have to stop thinking about how things are going to benefit us and start thinking about how we can benefit the entire community. And this is why you were given gifts and abilities. Because you can share. You can be within a group of people and really make a change and a difference. But first, before you do that, you have to stop thinking about yourself. You have to start thinking outwardly. And to think outwardly, the first step is to think inwardly. Right? So she encourages us to act selflessly and wisely for the benefit of all sentient beings. This is her teaching. She says that our nature is the same as her White Tara herself. And as we meditate with her, we become her. The principle of the fact that we're all made of energy, at that energy point, we're all linked to our soul, and all our souls are linked to each other. We are linked to creation. We are not as independent of each other as we think. But just like I said, that we can't make, ask someone else to make us happy. We can also not observe someone's suffering without trying to help. We have to let go of our fears that we're not, if we share of ourselves or what we have, that then we're not going to have enough. Because if you share with someone, someone else will share with you. That's how it works. Once you start turning yourself that way, outwardly to help all sentient beings, other sentient beings will recognize your action and will be there for you. I know this is like the huge leap of faith for some of you to believe, but that is how it works. And until you make that leap of faith, you will never know. That's why faith is so important. I believe that I'm loved and I'm supported, that I'm always guarded, that I'm always receiving God-loving energy. If I forget that, then I'll go meditate to remind myself, because then if I forget that, it's because I disconnected. Whatever disconnected me could be a stressful day, it could be anything. But if I feel this disconnect, the first thing I will do is go into meditation and reconnect myself. And then I know that I'm not alone. I know that I even though it seems like I am, there's all this invisible energy surrounding me, all of these different goddesses and ascended masters that are guiding me and protecting me. And so I'm not alone, and I can get through whatever it is that I'm facing with. And the more faith I have and the more time I spend meditating, the more simple my life becomes, the less obstructions I have. And the more I realize that there's no point in these things, I can let go of those things because they're not important. What's important is this peace that I have inside, this love that I feel penetrating me and outwardly expressing it to others around me. Another lesson is that, and I talked about the images, you can find them usually in more spiritual places, bookstores. If you go to temples, they'll have sometimes them images for sale. But all representation of sacred images represent the path of awakening, of the liberation of the suffering. There's meaning behind it. And in meditating with the image, you're linking yourself in osmosis kind of mode of absorbing something that is there. So it's knowing something without actually knowing it, right? It's taking the essence from this image or from this these statues and connecting with the energy that it represents. The White Tara provides encouragement and support as a spiritual resources, not just material. I think that's all of them. They are there to help us free our soul. They are there to help us grow. And as the sacred feminine, I'm not a feminist, but as the sacred feminine, I think it's important to recognize that they were key into letting us women know that we have a right to spirituality, we have a right to enlightenment, we have a right to feel this love, this peace, and it is our right to work towards this goal. The the White Tara represents virtues within us that we need to cultivate. It's not asking you to be perfect. It took her 10 million years. Who's in a rush? But the importance is that we need to cultivate it, to grow those inside of ourselves. And we need to be able to develop these qualities I never ask anyone to be perfect overnight. I certainly was not. I'm still not. But to cultivate it means to make an active effort every single day. Remember the meditation that we do every morning, at least my students and I encourage them to do this meditation. Just for today, may the divine wisdom guide me in my action. May divine love fill my spirit, my heart, my soul. May divine will guide me into making the proper decision to stay on the right path. Just for today, I'm grateful for simple things to help you cultivate the light, not the obscurities. And if in a moment you have a flash of anger, or if you have, a pride or whatever it is, then recognize the moment for what it is. And then work on being able to change and purify these energies. And as you work on this daily, it will make a huge difference in your life, because then eventually, as this is what you're cultivating, then that's what you'll be growing. Anybody who's grown plants in a garden, if you keep pulling out the weeds, if you keep fertilizing what you want to grow, well, if you plant your carrots, you're going to have carrots. You're not going to end up with, dandelions or cabbage. If you took care of it every day, if you invested in it every day, at the end, you will grow what you wanted to grow. But it requires time and effort. And so you'll need to put this time in and this effort in. The way to nirvana, which is the end of reincarnation, the end of samsara, is to work at it. It's not something that's going to be handed out for free. It's not something that's going to be given to anyone. It is something that is particularly... the beauty of it is that it depends on us and our efforts. So those who apply themselves will have better results, sooner results, but it is within everybody's reach, which is really the true beauty of this. Everyone can achieve it if you put the time and effort into it. Getting a proper teacher and a proper mentor or proper guidance is always key to being able to having a higher rate of success, right? I know people who are in AA and they had really good sponsors, and then others who didn't have good sponsors. And so their journey has been more difficult until they find a better mentor, a better sponsor. And then they're being guided in the process of what the 12 steps are, which are spiritual steps, not just do this, do this, and do that. There's a certain introspection, certain evolution, a certain transformation that needs to take place. You can still achieve that on your own, but it might be more difficult, more challenging. You don't need to be on your own for this. You can get help. You can get assistance. If Buddhism is for you, then start looking for ways to learn deeply and how to involve yourself in a daily basis, in the daily living. So there we are. It's the end of our talk already. It's, I'm just going to read the references that I've used for today. Preparing the talk, there's Meditation on White Terra by the Foundation of the Preservation of Mahayana Traditions from Education Service. There's The Goddess, a World of Myth and Magic by Berlin Mutin, Barefoot Books, 2003. The Book of Goddess, a Celebration of Divine Feminine by Chris Walder from Abrams in 2006. Goddess Guidance Oracle Cards by Dorothy Virtue by Hay House in 2004. White Terra by Naljor Creation. It's the same company, the same artist that publishes his own stuff, and the particular print was 2004. The World Religion by John Bowker by DK, 2006. And so for YouTube videos, I've listened to a few, but like I said, I haven't found one that was more of a monk singing. It was more of singing than a mantra of repeating. So I think that personally, my choice will be Buddhist monks actually reciting the mantra. So I would recommend perhaps Tom Kenyon. Go look at his, he has tons of CDs, tons of downloads, musical downloads that are available. And keep an eye out for it. Or like I said, put your own calming music in the background, record your own voice for 108 times repeating the mantra. And pronunciation doesn't have to be perfect, but you can listen to the pronunciation on the YouTube videos and make your own afterwards. And then start doing your mala, visualizing the Waitara. So here we are. I see there's a lot of listeners. So we're going to do the question period now.